You're listening to Tremendous Leadership with Dr. Tracy Jones.
Hello to our Tremendous Leadership fans. Get ready for another Leader on Leadership podcast episode where we pull back the curtain on leadership and we talk with leaders of all ages and stages about what it takes to pay the price of leadership. And today I am tremendously excited because my guest is Bill Keller. Bill, welcome.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
Thank you, Bill. Let me tell our listeners a little bit about you. So Bill Keller's entrepreneurial journey evolved from leading manufacturing businesses to founding Staffing Global, a pioneer in remote staffing. And although Bill is a PA native, he currently lives in Colombia, South America, with his wife and two children. And in his free time, he enjoys reading, traveling, and biohacking. I want to hear about that. Again, Bill, welcome.
Well, thank you so much. It's great to talk with you again. It's always a pleasure whenever we get a chance to speak. So we had a great conversation just a few days ago. It was awesome.
Well, I love that. And we'll link back in this episode to that. So to our listeners who wonder, how does Tracy know all these tremendous people? Bill and I go back and his sister, Padgett, was on the podcast a couple months ago. So I think that's what led you to reach out to me. Correct, Bill?
Yeah, well, I've already seen you on LinkedIn and see a lot of your posts. And so we've kind of had some conversations that way. And I was thinking about leadership for my own podcast. And I thought, well, who better? And I think that she brought the podcast with my sister kind of brought you to mind again and said, wow, she would be an awesome guest. And so that's kind of what brought us together again. So
I love it. And then I want to talk as we unpack this. You're in Colombia. And so Bill's like, hey, you're on my podcast, but I don't live in this country. And I'm like, what? As somebody who's lived all over the world, I haven't in 15 years, but I love that. And I love that you're running your business. So we'll talk a little bit about that so our listeners can hear about that because I'm truly living the entrepreneur's dream.
I was doing this before it was cool, you know, like COVID came and everybody's like, oh, we can travel and go anywhere. But I was doing it 15 years ago and it's been quite a journey. And I don't know if we've talked about this. There were some books that obviously led to my journey, right? It's always goes back to books, right? You're going to be the same person 5 years from now, except for the people you meet and the books you read. And it's so true in my own life. Those books, there was two seminal books basically that kind of led to that transformation for me. One is called The World is Flat by Thomas Friedman. And then the other is The 4-Hour Workweek. And basically just talking about how in The World is Flat, how the internet was kind of flattening the playing field all over the world.
Yes.
And just giving some examples of everything that you could do and coming from a manufacturing business and then being exposed to this virtual world. I was like, wow, you could do that? What could I do with that, right? And it just got my mind spinning. And then the other was The 4-Hour Workweek, but that was a life changer as well. There was a lot of tech in that book in the beginning, but it's really about a mindset shift, about changing the way you're thinking. And I found it to be an incredible book that just kind of opened up the possibilities for me. And so that kind of started my journey to build a remote company and specifically made it that way. I had four things, basically. I had come out of a bankrupt, basically not quite a bankruptcy. It's a long story and it's one that your listeners might want to hear about sometime, but basically I got caught up with a wrong partner. Was actually investigated by the SEC. There was some challenging times. And so that's all part of leadership. And while I would never want to go through it again, I'm thankful that I went through it the first time because it was an amazing learning experience. So,
well, and I love the fact that you're talking about staffing because as we're going to talk in leadership, no matter what your vision is, you can't get it right without the right people. And I'm reading all these books on Jesus and how he developed his exemplary followers. And it's like, yeah, you've got to be very intentional about that. So, okay, well, I can't wait to unpack this. And I want to hear about that wrong partner story because I know our listeners have gone through that. I went through that about 2 years ago. So I want to hear about that because that really goes into one of the prices you're going to have to pay. But let's talk loneliness. Charles, in his speech, The Price of Leadership, said, you know, leadership isn't for the faint of heart. It's what we're all called to do, but it's not for those seeking the easy road. And he says, one of the things you're going to have to do is be able to tolerate and deal with loneliness. So can you unpack what loneliness looks like for you as a leader, maybe when you were in a season of it, and what words of wisdom you would share with our listeners?
I think it actually goes back to, so I don't think about being lonely a lot. I think it goes back to when I was a kid. I was kind of a loner. Never had a whole lot of friends. I went to a private Christian school and one, there wasn't many kids in the school to begin with. It was one of those. And so kind of not really integrated with the kids in my neighborhood. There wasn't a lot that were my age. My sister was 7 years older than I was at the time. And so just kind of me and myself, and kind of got comfortable with that. And I think there's a quote that I really like. Loneliness is a tax that one must pay for a certain complexity of mind. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. And so I hate to say that quote and say, is like, hey, I like kind of bragging, you have a complex mind. But I think I could probably say that. And people who know me would probably say that as well. And I think there's some truth to that. And so as I've gone about this, I think this is all about perspective. We assume things should be certain ways. I should not have to do this alone. I should have other people supporting me. Other people should be, you know, willing to come alongside me and help me with my goals and vision. Like, why? Why do we automatically assume that that should be the case? I'm saying is, and I think when faced with adversity, we often ask, why me? Oh, why not me? Why did I have to? And so I think I've experienced that loneliness, but I think that I've also become comfortable with that loneliness, right? And I think the older I get, while I like being with people, I'm even more comfortable being by myself than I was at one time. And I was like, okay, the other day I just went out to eat by myself. I was away in a city on a business trip and go out to a restaurant and just sit and eat by myself. And you know, I was okay with that, right? And so have to be okay being comfortable with yourself. And I think that is something that you can learn over time, but definitely something you need to be prepared for if you're going to be in business, because you think your family is going to be there to support you. They don't really aren't really going to understand you. I think of Andy Andrews, people don't understand the higher purpose to which I've been called. He has that, and it's one of his quotes. And I think that's so true. And so I think be prepared for that. Don't expect them. Don't expect certain things. Expectation is really the cause of a lot of pain. I know that's kind of a Buddhist philosophy, but I think there's some truth to that. That expectation is really, and the attachment is really the cause of a lot of pain. And so I've been going through over the past, I would say 10 years, a lot of soul searching and saying is, okay, what are these expectations? What am I really attached to? What am I thinking that I'm entitled to? And by doing that, it's kind of allowed me a different perspective to be okay with not necessarily having the people that I would like by my side all the time.
And you know what? When you're okay with it, you're at peace. You know what I'm saying? And that's priceless. I mean, I think that's the thing beyond success and fame. We just want to be at peace. And boy, I love that, that expectation is the cause of a lot of pain. And we look in the world about, oh, you know, I did this with the team. And we all understand we're meant to be in this collective called humanity. But yet, as you said, there are going to be times when we are going to be the only ones getting the call. It's our call. And I love how you unpack that. And that's what I love about getting older, too. You just become so much more comfortable with it. And it's a real, I wouldn't want to do my 40s again or 50s. Yes.
Yeah. I think Scott Galloway, I don't know if you've ever heard of Scott Galloway, and he talks about the smile of happiness. He says, basically, when you're young in your early 20s, it's generally a happy time. There's not a whole lot of anxiety. And then you go into the 20s and 30s and into your 40s. And he says, that's when the stuff really gets real. And typically you dip in your happiness. And then as you start to come out of that, as you go into your 50s and your 60s, that happiness increases. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. So hopefully I'm an early bloomer. I've noticed that I think that I've gotten that before I've gotten into my 50s. I'll be 50 this year. So. But I think I've experienced that in my 40s. It's taken a lot of work. I think you can do it sooner, but it requires a lot of introspection.
Absolutely. Okay. So thank you for unpacking loneliness for us, Bill. Okay. Next is weariness. And, you know, Charles was always kind of in the mindset that you're always going to encounter some people that do more than what's required, a lot that do less. Or is your case where you talked about with the wrong partner, people that do something you didn't even expect was going to be done. I'm sure that was incredibly taxing and draining. Any of our listeners out there that have been through something like that, it is a drain like no other. But can you unpack weariness for us, how you deal with it? And how you stay strong when you're in those really challenging seasons. Like I said, half the stuff, maybe we should have seen coming, but the other half, it's just the nature of living in a fallen world. Bad stuff happens to good people. Some of the stuff, there's no way we could have prevented. For whatever reason, God threw it on us. It is what it is. So can you talk to us about weariness?
Well, there was something you said there that I want to kind of point out. Bad stuff happens to us. And I think that, in the podcast with my sister, I shared a story with her about the Chinese farmer. I think you mentioned that. I think that's so true that oftentimes we don't really know what's good and bad. We think we do because we equate pain with bad, but pain doesn't necessarily mean that it is a negative, right? Or pleasure with a positive all the time. And so I think that as I've gotten older, We think that the things that cause us pain are bad, and there is, I don't know that that's really the case. Really only know that in time. And so as far as the weariness is concerned, is one, I think it's Jim Rohn, he says, do you have enough reasons for success? And what are your reasons that you're moving forward? So you might be having this vision, but what are the reasons for completing this vision? So I think you need to keep that in mind. Like, why am I doing this? And this other thing is delayed gratification. Am I willing to put it off? Am I willing to do the work? Really, that's what we're talking about. Am I willing to do the work before the payoff? And so understanding that that's a prerequisite of success, understanding what it's going to look like. And I think, again, going back to the expectation portion of it, it's like, why would I expect that I'm any different than anybody else? If you go back in and look at Edison, right? 1,000 light bulb, he had to do 1,000 times, 10,000 times. I don't know what the actual story is. Say, oh no, I shouldn't have to do that. No, he persevered. And I think there's a book by Andy Andrews, The Traveler's Gift. And one of the principles in that book is, I will persist without exception. Mm-hmm. Weariness is just part of the process on the road to success. If you're getting there and you haven't experienced the things we're talking about, the loneliness and the weariness, my guess is you probably are not that successful. Maybe you think you are, maybe that's okay in your world, but the reality is there's going to be a price that you're going to have to pay. And I think that expectation to understand that, the only thing that I would tell people is if they truly understand the price that they would have to pay, they probably wouldn't go on the journey. Right. That's the great thing about youth that I love, is this like this incredible belief that they can do anything. And so there's this balance as I get older, because I'm like, I wouldn't do that again. But it's this foolishness of youth that allows us to move into places that we probably shouldn't have gone. But by doing it and just going ahead anyway, we get it done. And then we persevere through the, you know, I think we don't understand when we begin. And then we say, if we have enough reasons to continue, we continue through the weariness. And so what are your reasons, and how does that relate to your mission and to your goal? And how do you want to be remembered?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for unpacking weariness. Or I'm sorry, Bill, next. Loneliness.
I've been called
weariness.
Worse than Scott. Don't worry.
I got another Scott coming up after this, but okay, loneliness, weariness. And I love that you tied that back into expectations again, because boy, that can really make you tired too. Cause just the thought, why did this or not happen? And that really can drain you too. So I love that you tied that back to that. Hey, you mentioned the Chinese farmer. What is that? Unpack that. I think I know what parable you're talking about, but you mentioned that.
So the parable of the Chinese farmer is that there was a Chinese farmer, and he had a horse. And one day his horse ran away, and everybody in the village came to him and said, oh, this is terrible. This is horrible. And he says, maybe. And then next day, his horse comes back with 7 wild horses. And now he's a rich man in his community. And everybody says, this is fantastic. You're richly blessed. And he says, maybe. And then the next day, his son is breaking one of the wild horses, and he falls off and breaks his leg. And everybody comes around, and this is horrible. You know, what a horrible turn of events. And he says, maybe. And then the next day, the subscription officers come and take the rest of the men to go to the army, but they leave his son because of his broken leg. And everybody says, hey, this is fantastic. And he says, maybe. And that goes back to, I think we don't really know in the moment what we think is good or bad. And I think that just having that perspective allows us, because when things go bad in our minds, like you're like, oh, this is the end. And they're like, no, this isn't the end. And it could be the best thing that ever happened to you.
And I think back to Paul, my hero, my biblical hero, who talks about, yay, you get to suffer. Yay, you have been chosen to suffer. That's a beautiful thing. And I'm like, okay, I still struggle with that, but excellent point. We don't know in the moment. So thank you so much for that. Okay.
So I don't want to, like, obviously, I wouldn't want to contradict Paul, but I would like to say pain is inevitable. Suffering, I think, is optional, though.
Absolutely. Well, and I think in his, it's a spiritual sense. I mean, certainly we're coming up on Easter. I think Christ suffered on the cross. I don't think it was a mind. There is suffering. I mean, anybody that's dealing with cancer, we live in a fallen world.
And that's crime. What I was saying. I think as far as pain is concerned, I think there's that difference between pain and suffering. So sometimes you use that synonymously. And I think there's a good, sometimes we make a distinction between that, because I've seen so many people who are in pain.
Yes.
Who aren't suffering
Absolutely.
In the way that we would think that that's the choice, right? That you see them and you're like, how are you doing that? You're in so much stress and what I would be in distress, and you're able to come out and go, you have such a cheerful attitude, even in the midst of all of that. It doesn't seem like you're suffering. And you have other people who are like, seem to have everything, and the world is falling apart.
Right. Well, you know what Charles would call them?
Thumbsuckers.
Thumbsuckers.
That is so indelibly imprinted on my mind when we talked about this before, that I had seen him as an early teenager, and I've heard many speakers after him. But just the you thumbsucker, right? This is like, this is, he was just no holds barred. He wasn't, obviously, I understand there was like, I don't want to say an act to it, but there was a way to try to build it up. And I think he did that, and he brought it forth, and like, why should I be, you know, and I go, why me? You know, why not me? Basically, that's the same thing. You thumbsucker, like, you know, what's your problem? Like, why are you expecting it should be any different for you?
Exactly.
I was,
he'd say, oh, of course you got a problem. You're not dead. You know, in other words, welcome to life, you know, get up, you thumbsucker.
Yeah, you better have a problem, right? If you don't have any problems, you don't have a job.
Well, that's to your point where you said, if you're not experiencing this, you may be a lino, a leader in name only. You may not really be paying the price kind of thing. So, okay. So Bill, next, loneliness, weariness. The next he talked about is abandonment. And typically abandonment is one of those words, I want to unpack the meaning of it. We hear a lot about, oh, fear of abandonment issues, or I'm in pet rescue, abandonment, very bad thing. But for Charles, abandonment was stop thinking about what you like and want to think about in favor of what you ought and need to be thinking about and doing. So it was almost abandoning or pruning away the non-value added or not the highest use of your time to really focus on what you need to. And as entrepreneurs, we're chronically involved with, ideas. So can you unpack for us what abandonment was? How did you abandon what you did in high volume running a very tangible stateside manufacturing businesses, which is where I grew up as an operations girl, into this world of virtual global staffing?
Well, I think you have to. So what are the things you're going to need to abandon? You're going to need to be able to abandon old ideas, right? It's one of the things that I think people have a hard time letting go of. They say, it shouldn't be this way. Going back to my partner, so I'll kind of address that. So I was in the manufacturing business. Basically, I was, I think, 21 at the time. I didn't have any money to go back to school. My family didn't have any money. We found a partner to back us. My dad had found a partner who was going to provide us with the money. And we were supposed to have a division of labor. My father was supposed to do the sales. I was supposed to do the manufacturing, and he was supposed to do the finance. Well, he was from the plane community. And basically, because of his former profession, he was an accountant. People were coming to him to invest money. And so basically, he was taking large amounts of investments, 1,500 people across 7 different states. If it sounds like a bank, that's basically what it was. Mm-hmm. But he didn't have all the licenses and all the regulations. And so therefore caused a lot of problems. And basically, he didn't steal the money. He didn't do anything like that. It wasn't nefarious in that way. But there was a lot of hubris involved. And that got me into a very bad position where I had to make some very difficult decisions. And so having to abandon a dream, because I had worked 13 years, sometimes 100-hour weeks, up to 36 hours straight. I wouldn't recommend that for anybody. I think that was stupid at the time. I wore it as a badge of honor. But as I look back at that, I don't necessarily think that that was a good thing. But I had invested my life and made and had to pay a lot in terms of loneliness, right? And in terms of all these different things, weariness, definitely, as you're working all these hours and you're giving up your time and you're saying, it shouldn't be this way. But, you know, I think you need to abandon those ideas and say, well, why do I say it shouldn't be this way? And so I think that's, you need to understand, what are you willing to sacrifice for what are you willing to gain? And that will help you to understand what you might need to abandon and what you're willing to leave behind. If you're willing to leave the quote unquote easy life behind. I think hard decisions now, easy life later. Easy decisions now, hard life later. And so I think that willing to make the choice to do things that others are unwilling to do will lead to a life that others don't have. And so I think it was Jerry Rice, a famous football player. So today I will do what others won't, so tomorrow I can do what others can't.
Mm-hmm.
And whether that is, I'm going to work harder, I'm going to abandon things that I need to leave behind. So I was talking about, what do you need to abandon? You need to sometimes abandon a dream. Sometimes you need to abandon foolish beliefs, naive beliefs that I had when I first went into business. Like, oh, I'll be in this for 2 years, we'll make a bunch of money, and then I'll go back to school. 13 years later, basically going bankrupt. But I understood where I was going. We'll talk about that later, I think, as far as vision. And that helped me to stay the course, even when during those difficult decisions, because basically I structured a deal in which pretty much all of my employees got to keep their job, except for me. So I had to abandon that dream so that others could keep theirs. And that's part of what I believe leadership is all about. Yeah. And what else do you need to abandon? You know, I think you probably need to, if you have friendships, sometimes you're going to need to set those aside because those aren't the people that are going to drive you forward towards your vision. And, you know, I think it was Jim Rohn who I remember saying it first, you are the average of your five closest friends. And so if you have a desire and if you have a vision to go far, you need to make sure that those people around you that you have close to you are going to be leading you forward. And it doesn't mean that you just, I think it was you just in another conversation. You can't change the people around you, but you can change the people around you, right? You can change the people you associate with. And it doesn't necessarily mean when we say abandon, like it has a very negative connotation, like, oh, I'm just leaving you. I'm never going to talk to you again. I don't think that that's really what I was talking about in there, but I can't spend as much time with you. I can't invest in you the way that I could have if we were on the same page, if we were headed in the same direction.
Yeah.
But we're really not. And at this point, my vision and my role and goal in life, it holds a higher importance right now than our friendship does. And for many, that might seem bad. And for those that seems bad, they probably don't understand what it really takes to be successful and in the calling and where you want to go.
Oh, I really appreciate you unpack that. And yeah, I love the easy life now, hard life later. That's hard life now, easy. Boy, that is so true. We got Ben Franklin's Way to Wealth coming out in a couple of weeks. And that's the same thing now. You work hard and you save now so you can retire early. That's it. You don't do it, you're going to be in debt to your eyeballs until the day you die. It's like, man, it's just so simple, everything that we do right now. So, but I love that you talked about, hey, we're not talking about ghosting people or discarding them. But when you said, I can't spend time with you if, and I said, if we're not reading the same book, because life, even work, is kind of a book club discussion. And if you're not on the same page, you're off reading. I always say it's like, we talk about this, leadership and followership is a dance. And if you're not hearing the same music or reading the same thing or that value congruence, you can still be friends. But when it comes to the large chunk of your life that is developing your passion, your calling, making money, helping other people make money, paying taxes so we can have nicer. I mean, that entails really being very intentional about who you spend time with.
Yep. And so for me, go back to the loneliness portion. I really never had a lot of friends that I would call good friends. My friends and how I tried to keep people close, how I tried to keep people around me is through books. I was in the same company, the manufacturing company, and we were having some serious problems. I had the worst employees ever, right? They were horrible. And I was like, I need better employees. And I started to sit there and think and go, I was like, okay, what do all these relationships have in common? And I figured out it was me, right? It was me. It was, you know, I was the problem, right? I wanted to blame it on others, right? But, and then I just started diving in because I was like, okay, somebody else has figured this out and they know more than me.
Yes.
I got it. And so I just started surrounding myself and listening to John Maxwell podcasts and every book that I could get a hold of. You know, I remember one about Danny Cox. I think you know him, and I think he just passed last year. He was the Sonic Boom salesman and basically talked about how he had to go out and sell that Sonic Booms were good for people because he was an Air Force pilot. But he was in, I don't know what he was selling at the time, but he had taken his number one office to 32nd place, like in a matter of 3 months. And his boss came in and said, I have to tell you, you know, through pursed lips, that I am looking for your replacement. And he says, that is not only the shortest, but finest motivational speech I have ever heard. He says, no. And he then determined to that point in time that he was going to get moving and find out what he didn't know. And I think he said, I called all these people and said, hey, I took my office from first place to 32nd place. I need to have lunch with you now.
Yes.
And he said, he's never turned down. So anyway, it was for me, it wasn't necessarily calling other people, but it was reading those books and taking that to heart. And that's one of the things that I have an innate ability to is take in huge amounts of information and recall it, and then hopefully assimilate that into my decision-making process. So,
right. But, well, and I love that you talked about, I mean, we can always call people. People know they can call me. We can call each other. You know, I called Dave Ramsey to get him on my podcast 2 weeks ago. So we can call each other, but I love that you talked about but reading, because then you really get to unpack it for yourself, because sometimes people may not be as truthful as you, because although we, you know, love smacking people around, we still we're kind and we don't want to hurt anybody, but sometimes they need to hear the tough stuff. And I love that you said somebody else's has figured out. It's why I went back for my PhD, not so I could be the smartest person in the room. Like, that never dawned on me. Not so people could call me Dr. Jones, although that was a little bit of it, but somebody else has figured this out. And I, at 45, I could not figure it out. I was having some successes, but a lot of failures. And I'm like, it shouldn't be this hard. Something's not right. I've worked enough places, like you said, to know maybe I should work on really leading myself first and not others. So I love that you really talked about it. Read it. There is nothing out there, that there is nothing new under the sun. There's no new revelation. You just have to go out and discover it. So I really love that you talked about it.
I think a wise man once said that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay.
Go back to Solomon in the Bible.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, he said that. It's all revelation. Yeah. And wisdom. That's it. So now we're going to talk about vision. And again, some of us, I know I grew up sitting under people like, you know, Zig Ziglar and Al Magdino. And I'm like, man, these guys, their brains are wired in ways that mine is not. And my father was like, no, vision is not something so esoteric, or you're like Nostradamus or Elon Musk or these great inventors. He said, it's really seeing what needs to be done, the attraction kind of thing, and then doing it. You know, the action. So my father was always very pragmatic about, yes, you can have strategic planning, but without strategic execution, their vision is very tangible and very active, not just this kind of esoteric thing. So how do you define vision, Bill, and how do you craft your vision for the future? And you can tell our fans a little bit about the different offices you have in different countries, and I can't wait to hear it.
So one, for me, it took me probably at least 20 years, maybe closer to 30, to try to figure out what my life purpose was. And so in doing that, and so I've kind of figured it out that I'm here to give people opportunities and help them to grow. I'm taking all this information in, and then am I able to speak into their lives to help them to grow? And then also, I believe giving people opportunities. That's why I like working overseas. And so part of in the book, the 4-hour work week, he talked about using overseas resources. And basically I was like, this is a whole new world for me, because I had had problems with employees, but I was like, I had also seen a lot of people where I'd given them opportunities and they really didn't take advantage of it. Mm-hmm. And it cost me a lot to give them those opportunities. And it was disappointing to me that, hey, here's your opportunity. And they were like, I don't really want it, or I'm not going to take advantage of it. But I find that working overseas, you get more people. I think they're more appreciative. I think they understand that this is an opportunity. And so, and it also helps us as business owners. And so that's one of the reasons that I moved into staffing. I had basically used overseas staff to help me run my marketing company, which I still have. And that's how I moved into the staffing company. And so basically I was using these resources. People were asking me, how am I doing this? Because I'd go to Costa Rica for 3 months, or I'd work from Florida for a couple months before remote was cool. And they were kind of wondering how I did this. And so that made the transition into staffing. And I really wanted to move away. I still have the marketing company, but move away from the marketing, because it was all about products and it wasn't about people. And if you're really going to make a difference in this life, especially with my vision that I had to help grow people, I was going to need to move more into that. And so that's one of the reasons that I moved into the staffing side. So I partnered up with a gentleman in India, and he basically runs our Indian operations, basically helps with making sure that all our people are taken care of, that our office is going well, that our HR activities are going well. And so we partner very well together. And I think that the vision is going back to a book, Good to Great, having a BHAG, if you're not familiar with that term, big, hairy, audacious goal. Like, what is that for me? Even though we should be so much bigger. And everybody in nowadays is talking about scaling, right? Oh, how do we scale this, right? If you look at most of the companies that have really scaled, like, they just threw money at it, right? I'm going through India in Uber, and I'm looking at this like, I can go a whole way across town, like a half an hour drive, for like $2 or $3, some crazy amount of money, right? And I'm like, well, how are they able to do that? And then I see an article that Uber is paying for 40% of my ride, right? They're actually borrowing money from some VC firm, and they're paying for 40% of my ride so I can go across a city in India at a reduced rate. And I'm like, well, You know, it goes back to the old adage, I'm losing a dollar on every sale, but I'm making it up in volume. Okay. So if you see all these people scaling, we often get disappointed in our own growth, but not really understanding at what cost did that growth come. And so I want to make sure that people keep that in mind. But I would say is one, have a big vision, but understand you're working in the present. And not to get discouraged by that big vision, because you say is, okay, how far am I from that? And the other thing I would say is there was a gentleman, his name was, we used to go to Vistage. You're probably familiar
Oh,
with
I
the
sure am.
CEO group. And those speakers were also influential in my life. And he talked about this where you have a rubber band. Actually, I think it was in the fifth discipline by Peter Senge. But anyway, if you have a rubber band between your two fingers, right? And if down here is your current reality, and your top finger is your goal or your vision or where you want to go, the further you are from your current reality, what does that create if you have a rubber band there? Creates tension. Think of tension as being bad. And he says, no, it's just tension, right? So part of this vision process, and the reason I'm getting to this is to be able to have a good vision in my mind is you need to be okay with tension, because if you're going to have a big vision for your life, you're going to have this tension in your life because you're not there. You haven't met it. And the thing is, with that rubber band in between your two fingers, there's two ways to reduce the tension, isn't there? I can bring my current reality up to where I want to go, or I can drop my vision down to my current reality, but one can be done immediately and one takes time.
Yes.
And so being comfortable in this constant tension, which is not easy, is paramount to a great vision. As far as what does that vision mean for you, I don't necessarily know. I think that comes partly through action. So most people, I think that they're going to go into a room and that vision is going to be like handwritten on the wall, right? You know, like there's the handwriting on the wall. There's my vision, right? In this miraculous play of vision or whatever. I'm trying to think of a better word, like this, Nostradamus like
Or
type
the
of
road to
effect.
Damascus, yeah,
Yes.
where God comes and says,
Boom.
yeah,
And I don't think that that's really the case. I think
right,
it's more of working through the small things. I think
yeah.
it was in John Maxwell, do what you can where you are with what you have, and that will lead you forward. It's kind of like rock climbing, although if you know me and you've seen me, I'm not a rock climber. I don't have the body for that, a little too heavy. But when you go to that wall, you look up and you say, there's no way that I'm going to be able to climb this wall. And if you kind of look at it closer, you're like, oh, well, there's a handhold right there, but I could probably only go 2 feet. I think it's a matter of starting. And as you move forward through that, more of the vision is shown to you. You never probably get a full vision right from day one. And I think that that vision kind of, as you're moving forward through the fog, as it were, it can get clearer. There's things that you can do, I think, through personal growth and through introspection that can give you greater clarity through the fog. But I think there's also this portion of faith and understanding that you're moving towards the vision, even though it's not fully developed. If you're waiting for the plan to be fully developed, you're going to be waiting a long time, and you're going to be waiting at, it's kind of like, I'm sure you've heard the analogy of, oh, I'm going to go across town, but I'm going to wait till all the traffic lights are green. Right? Like that's not going to work, right? You need to go from one to the next, and that's just the way life works. So.
I love it. Excellent. Okay, so Bill, we covered loneliness, we covered weariness, we covered abandonment and vision. Is there anything else leadership related that we haven't touched on that you would like to share with our listeners?
I think going back to the expectation, but I think really spending a lot of time on personal growth, that's development of ideas, but I think it's also the understanding of self. It's really that understanding. Until you understand yourself, you're going to have a really hard time leading people. Because to understand, like, why am I doing this, right? Why does this upset me? I think this ability to handle your emotions. I find it very interesting, because while I do get upset, I very rarely, I would say very rarely, get to the point where I'm not in control. I think in many people, like, go, you just don't understand how what they did, right? You don't understand how they upset me, right? And like, well, you're giving them your power, right? So you need to understand yourself. If that's really the case, you need to go back in. And I think that leadership is a lot about understanding self. And when you can do that, That is really the key. There was a book that I read called Awareness by, I don't know if you've heard of Anthony DeMello. And that was, for me, was a fantastic book to really kind of open up my mind into what I didn't understand about myself and why I wanted certain things. Oftentimes we want, let's say we're in a crisis. You don't want enlightenment. I mean, people say, oh, I really want to know about myself. He said, no, you just want your toys fixed. You know, let's say your business is going bad. And do you really want to understand why it's going bad? Or do you just want somebody to come in and fix it, right? Put it back to the way it was before, so I don't have this problem anymore. And he talks about that in the book. And the book is made up of really his talks. And so each one is probably only a few pages, but as you go through it, at least for me, I had to read each one a couple times because I was like, wow, it just hit me so hard. And I think another good book is Mind Hacking Happiness. I don't know if you've ever read that, but that was for me. I don't always agree with everybody's philosophy or, you know, like under the books. So depending upon your audience, if they read this book, it's like, okay, this doesn't jive with some of my values. And it's just so you know that, but I think we as Christians and people of faith need to understand, like, okay, I can read an idea and there could be truth in an idea that might not necessarily be quote unquote a Christian idea per se. Although it's just something in my mind that, like, the Mind Hacking Happiness really helped me to understand, like, what am I attached to and why am I feeling this pain? And that allowed me to disconnect in many ways so that I wasn't so emotional about the issues and I was able to be more dispassionate and able to make better decisions in my life. And there's a place for emotion. Be moved by the emotion, right? But don't let it control you.
Right. Don't be held hostage or cause you to go off the deep end. And I love that you're talking about emotional regulation, because leadership, I think, like, 1% of it is about people doing things. Everybody knows how to do things. I mean, unless you're a rocket scientist, and even they already know how to do things. It's all about personalities and how you show up and attitude and emotional regulation and thumb sucking and optimism and self-efficacy. So I love that when we dial ourselves in, because you're always going to have to be dealing with this with people. I have one of my dearest friends, Arnette Wright, my PhD program. She used to say to me, Tracy, she goes, I love people. But people, you know, and it's like Charles would say that my problem isn't motivating me. My problem is keeping other people from demotivating me. And I said, I mean, we're fairly intrinsically motivated, a little bit of a loner. If it was just me and my dogs and my books and Mike, and that was it in the whole universe, I would be cool with that. But it's all the other people that you have to interact with. And I love that you're really talking about it. You've got to unpack your biases, your self-awareness blind spots. What is it that's triggering you, and see it for what it is? So thank you for sharing all these books that have obviously made quite the impact in your life.
Yeah. If I leave you with one other thing, is don't go into this for the accolades, right? If you're going into leadership and business and you're like, oh, I'm going into it because I need something and I need affirmation, you are in the wrong business, right?
Oh, you got that right. Man, affirmation. Yeah. What would you do to be to that? Go rescue a pet. Pat, quickest way to affirmation, no matter what you do, it's love. That's why we love our animals so much. Pure affirmation. All right, hey, what's the best way for people to get in touch with you, Bill, in case they're interested in hearing more about what you do or seeing about your business? Well, are you for people like us all over the globe, or who's your ideal client too?
The ideal client is primarily a small business owner who is looking for accounting help. We also do some other things, really focus on bookkeeping and accounting. We feel that that's the easiest entry road for many people into using remote staff. It's kind of a language into itself. I have offices in Colombia and in India, but I also work in 3 other countries. And basically our job is to basically connect people. We hire them in the other countries. They come work for you inside your business, albeit remotely. And basically our job is to make sure that that relationship is working, because we work on both sides. So we actually have US coaches that coach our team in India and in Colombia, and to help them to gain a greater perspective on culture and then also success principles. And then we also are the glue that kind of brings everybody together and making sure that it is a successful relationship. And we back that up with like a 3-month, 100% money back guarantee to make sure that it is absolutely a fit for you. So if you're looking at remote work, even if it's not about accounting, I'd love to talk with you. Even if it's not the right fit for us, I can give you a lot of helpful hints and tips. I've been doing this for over 15 years. And so look me up on LinkedIn. You can go to our website, staffdifferent.com, or we also have a YouTube channel, Staffing Global.
Well, Bill, thank you. And for our listeners out there, we will have all the links down there. Hadn't thought about accounting, Bill. I'll definitely have to talk to you about that. That's just one thing. It didn't even dawn on me, but that totally makes sense. And I love the fact that if not Bill, you will help people talk about, because I think everybody, especially entrepreneurs, are dealing with staffing issues. And boy, there is no shortage of success stories about remote workers. But I mean, I use it for everybody in the publishing industry, from pagination to cover artists to uploading stuff. So yeah.
We do that as well. We actually have an art division, but your listeners might like to know this is I actually do the ads for five Amish newspapers across the country. So I have in the Plain community, they actually send us our ads. They get shipped over to India. We produce the ads for Amish newspapers here in the States. They send them back, get printed in the States and go out. And anyway, so
That's perfect.
if somebody in the Plain community can use us to run their ads, anybody can do this. So we do artwork. I've done many different things, but our focus moving forward is kind of in the accounting. But if you're needing artwork, design, all sorts of other things, be happy to help you and can point you in the
That's
right direction. So.
fascinating. All right. Well, Bill, thank you so much. And to our listeners out there, I want to thank you for tuning in and for paying the price of leadership. As Charlie Tremendous Jones said, remember, you're going to be the same person 5 years from now that you are today, except for two things: the people you meet and the books you read. So now you met Tremendous Bill, you heard about his tremendous experiences, and he gave us probably about 25 different books that we can go out and read too. If you like what you heard, please hit the subscribe button. Give us the honor of a five-star review and send this out to other people so we can continue to grow our tremendous tribe. As always, thank you for paying the price of leadership. Thank you again, Bill.
It was a pleasure. Thank you for having me on. I hope you have a great day.
You too, and everybody, you have a tremendous rest of your day too. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Tremendous Leadership with Dr. Tracy Jones. Find out more about Dr. Jones at www.tremendousleadership.com. If you've been ignited by something you heard in this episode, let us know by leaving a review for Tremendous Leadership wherever you listen to podcasts, or by sending us a message through www.tremendousleadership.com.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.